The following program is a collection of stooges talking about the happenings in the automotive detailing industry. It is meant to be comedic and informative. The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect the beliefs of their peers, their boss, or their ad partners. There may be some cuss words because that's how grown-ups talk in the real world. If you are a young, please seek permission before watching or listening any further.
Welcome to the Detail Solutions Podcast. My name is Alex Russell, and I am your host. All right. So, hope you guys caught the episode the other night. We did, or the other day, the last episode, really, we did on mentorship. It was a cool little topic. Had a lot of fun with it. Getting some good positive responses from it. So, hopefully it'll help you guys out listening to it. But we're back for Q&A, so it's been a while since we've done a Q&A or since I've done a Q&A, so I'm ready to jump into this. So obviously you guys know the detailsolutionspodcast.com is our website. It's going to have all of our links where you can find us on social media, where you can find the show. Obviously you're already listening to it, so you should know where to find it. We also have the preferred vendor page, which is our wonderful ad partners. Please go and check out their businesses. There's a link that takes you directly to their website. Some of them have coupon codes, some of them don't, but all you have to do is mention, hey, I heard about you from the Detail Solutions Podcast, and I'm sure they'll break you off a little bit of a discount. And in doing so, you know, they're going to spend money with us or with me. Now I got to keep saying me. I'm hopefully going to make you laugh. And then we got that hashtag money, money, funny. We also have the drip shop. It's where the t-shirts are, the hoodies, the embroidered hat. You can go there and get those if you want to check out or wear any of the merch. And we are available on YouTube. Our YouTube channel is the Detail Solutions Podcast. Please go give us a follow over there. Check us out, especially if you like watching these. And again, it might take me a week or so to get caught back up with these because I have to go through and do all the stuff Jason was doing. And then on TikTok, we are the Detail Solutions Pod. I'm terrible about TikTok, so that's all I can say about that. So it has been announced. I can officially say it. May 3rd through the 5th, 2024, Reds and Angel Wax are doing a training at Reds Detail Co. in Marietta, Georgia. I am going to be there. Speaking of the devil, he's trying to call me. So I'll be there along with Aaron Knox and Rain Albertson. I'm not going to be doing any of the training. I'm just going to come and podcast and hang out and make fun of Aaron and all that fun stuff. So if you're interested in that, get a hold of Angel Wax or Aaron. I know he's posting it up all over the place now. Please go like, share, follow, subscribe, hit that notification button anywhere that you are listening to us. Give us a follow, give us a review, please. We'd greatly appreciate it. Need all the listens and everything that I can get now. We've got some new sponsorship in the works, hopefully, so that would really help. I'm excited to have Jonathan on tonight. You guys know Jonathan Michael Monson. He's been on the show before. We did the hacker show. I've always enjoyed watching his growth throughout the years, and his story is pretty incredible what he's overcome to get to where he is now. So we finally got him on the show. So after this commercial break, we'll talk with Jonathan. We'll be right back.
detailer knows what a detailer wants. Aquatech is a company founded by detailers for detailers.
Aquatech Coatings is a company that was founded on the frustrations that we all face as professional detailers. And that is why we set out to build a company that eliminates those frustrations, to provide excellent customer service, quality products, reliability, efficiency, products that check all the boxes as professional detailers we need and we want.
Find out why so many detailers around the world are loving the Aquatech difference. Join our team today at aquatechcoatings.com.
And we're back with Jonathan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
You know, as good as I can be doing right now.
One day at a time, brother.
Exactly. Nah, it's all been love, man. I appreciate it, man. But no, man, I'm sitting down doing a podcast, and you know, that's one of the things that I enjoy in life. So can't be too bad. I did a coding today, so I made some money. So that helps, all that fun stuff. So yeah, man. So I'm gonna jump right into it. You know, the only question I always say it, the only question I come to the table with is the how, the where, the when, the why did you get into detailing?
Well, so I'm gonna go into the story of like the reason why our business has scaled and grown.
Sure.
It's my favorite story to tell, and honestly, it's the reason why we've scaled and grown. I've been detailing cars my entire life, which a lot of us have done. You know, I sanded my first car in my teens with my dad. So detailing, I've always really done detailing. I was in automotive repair for 13 years. I ran shops, and I got fired one day. Over the course of 2 weeks, we'd have two accidents at the shop. Both of them happened when I wasn't there.
Oh.
And they decided to put it on my shoulders, wanted me to basically pay for the damages on the cars.
So essentially you were Craig from Friday. You got fired.
Yeah. And part of it's my own fault. You know, as an adult, I'm 40 now. I got to take some ownership.
Yeah.
It was an email sent out about the situation, and I clicked the reply all button and put my foot right in my mouth because the owner wanted me to pay for the damages on the cars, and basically told him to pound sand. And that's what was the final straw that broke the camel's back. But it shocked me because I was the best manager in the company. Okay. I had opened 7 stores for them. I had just gotten a raise, just bought a company car because they were going to promote me to district manager, and totally shocked. And said, you know what? I'm done making money for everybody else. I've got a Bissell, you know, the green mean extractor, the expensive one that's in Lowe's. I got one of those. I said, let's just start a detail company. I'll start cleaning cars. And I did it the old school way, like everybody does, right? They start with nothing and you start cleaning the worst cars you can get a hold of, and
yeah,
realize real quick that you're not charging enough and you need to grow and scale the company. And that's what really gets me into the journey, right? Growing the business, I didn't realize I'd run businesses for years, you know, 13 years running other people's businesses, small businesses, corporate businesses, total of 21 shops that I ran. And I didn't realize how much more of a personal growth it was to grow your own business.
Yeah.
And we were mobile. So just a couple quick little pieces of what led to this growth is I went to go to a detail, and it was in a ghetto. Kind of not a nice area. And I watched a drug deal happen right in front of me. And it triggered some of my old, some things that I've been through, which I'll tell that story in a second. And I pretty much had a panic attack. Called the customer. She didn't answer. Left her a message. You could tell I was nearly in tears in the message and was like, hey, uncomfortable. Got to go home. I need to find my safe space, basically. And I went home and crawled up in bed. She called me back, and come to find out, she was a emergency response, a 911 operator. And she said, tell me your story, which the story is, when I was 15 years old, my face was crushed. I was jumped and punched in the side of the face with a lead lined glove. And the police believe it was gang initiation. So I've got, this is all titanium in my face. My basically the left side of my face, there's 3 titanium plates and 16 screws. And we went to court and everything. The kid never really got any time. His dad was a parole officer. He got 16 days plus time served. So he kept following me for 2 years after that. And would show up where I'd play basketball, would show up where I'd go bowling. So a very like high anxiety time in my life as a 15-year-old kid. And I didn't realize in my 30s how much it had impacted me. And I had anxiety issues. And then when I put myself in that scenario, I was like, wow, this affects me. And many of those who follow me on social media know that I preach Kerwin Ray. He's a Australian entrepreneur. He does a lot of really great content. And I was watching a piece of content once that said, basically, you got to take ownership of everything that's ever happened to you. You either have to rewrite the story in your head or you have to make it serve you in some way. You cannot allow things that have happened in your past or that are currently happening to you to have any power over you. And the only way to do that is to take blame for it. So this conversation with this lady was freeing because her response to it was, well, how about I bring my car to your house? I'd like to upgrade and get the absolute top tier package. And I want to support you in your growth. And obviously there were tears, there were hugs. It was just crazy to realize that when I told my story, somebody actually didn't judge me.
Listen to you. Yeah.
Right. As a 32-year-old man, to be afraid to go places or to have anxiety attacks, you know, you see all the mainstream stuff where people make fun of you needing a safe space. And, you know, it's, you worry about putting that out there because you're afraid you're going to get judged. And that was really the beginning of me realizing just telling the story is freeing. And it freed up some of the anxiety, and watching the Kerwin stuff really made me go, hang on a minute. Let me go and look at me and my past and how it's not serving me and how can we make it serve me in the future. With that said, I went to Rennie Doyle's training with IGL. This was back in, I think, 2018. Okay. And I told the story publicly for the first time ever. And not easy to do. Not easy to tell a story that basically reveals how your underbelly, you know, your weak spot.
Right.
I cried like crazy because it was the first time ever telling the story. And everyone in the room cried. Everyone in the room. And we ended up giving hugs. And it was just a great bonding experience. And a lot of people appreciated the fact that I was willing to be vulnerable. And I went on a mission after that. And I started telling the story more and more and more, because every time I told it, it freed me just a little bit more. In doing so, I realized that anxiety was actually a superpower. The idea that we look at anxiety as a negative, and Kerwin preaches this a lot. You take your frustrations, your emotions, your angers, your anxieties, and you flip them into positive light and make them serve you. So every time I had an anxiety attack, it was just heightened awareness that the area was disorganized or whatever I was in was unknown or disorganized. Because you don't have an anxiety attack when you know all of what's going on.
Right.
Unless it's a very high stress environment, I guess. So I started taking my anxiety attacks and writing them on a whiteboard, which is actually right next to me. I have two whiteboards in my office. And that would be placeholder, right? So you're taking your anxiety, you're putting it in a place, and then you come back when you're no longer in that emotional feel and you find out what led up to that attack and then you systemize it. So I systemized my entire business based off of anxiety attacks. I don't really have them much anymore. You know, it's very rare for me to have an anxiety attack unless I'm in a big crowd environment like SEMA for me.
Yeah.
When I first went in 2018, that was exercise. It wasn't let's go to SEMA. It was, let's go crush my anxiety.
Right.
And it helped a lot. You know, I went 2018, 19, and I think we went again in 21 after COVID.
So 19 was the first one I went to, and that's when I met you the first, well, really the only time, because that's the only time I've seen you out. Yeah. Other than like on the show and whatnot. So.
And I still get anxious about that stuff. People are like, why don't you go to MT and the SDC and this? I'm like, hey, one a year is good for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I still get the anxiety attacks, but they're just not as bad. But that allowed me to systemize my entire business. You know, like just an example, detailers, when you finish a car and you're delivering a car, your cash out, that's one of the most high anxiety times for a detailer. Because they're so anxious, you know, I put 15 hours into this car. Gosh, I hope they're happy.
Right.
Right. So I systemize their cash out. You know, there's certain key points that, you know, I make the person look through the car. I won't take your money unless I open the doors and you actually put your head inside the car.
Yeah.
And now I teach my staff that, and that it's systemized out the anxiety attacks. I don't have them anymore. Same thing with pickup, drop off. You know, people were dropping off at my house from 18 to 20, I think is when we moved in our first shop. That's my home. You know, people are coming to my house. So the anxiousness when we first started doing that was high. And then I just created a system of operations for that. So I guess the long and the short of the story of how we scaled the company is started with growing myself and working on my weaknesses and systemizing those to create systems within my business. And it's just all history from there, man. It's been, I can't even, you know, I'm not shocked that we were able to do this, but it wasn't the plan. You know, I was working in my driveway. I used to have steak every night for dinner, and you know, 4 or 5 nights a week, you're having a T-bone steak or ribeye, or, you know, living the life. And then my back actually went out, and that's why we actually scaled. My back was out for like 2 weeks. So this is a funny story, not to like ramble and go on to different spots.
That's what this whole show is about, man. Yeah, do whatever.
People know I can ramble. Right. My first technician that I hired, he had come over to replace a window in my Subaru. His name's Devin. He's still with us today. This was just over 4 years ago. And he was replacing the window in our Subaru, but he was in our canopy. And our canopy had a light switch. It had tunnel lights in it. It had, you know, all the different platforms that you could set your stuff on. You know, it was designed to work in. And he thought it was the coolest thing ever. And he was like, this is the greatest thing ever. I don't want to have to be out in the rain because it rains all the time here in Washington. And, you know, I get to replace this window in a nice, comfortable environment. I turned the heat on for him because I had a propane heater. And thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I said, why don't I take your number? If you're ever looking for part-time work, reach out. And it was 2 weeks after I pulled my back out. I still couldn't move or walk. I was still struggling. And I talked to Andrew, and I was like, I really think I should message Devin tomorrow. I think we need to bring in our first hire, because I'm realizing that, you know, Jonathan at 45 or Jonathan at 50 ain't going to be able to do this anymore.
Right, yeah.
I'm a big boy.
Yeah. No, that was the one thing that, like I said, when I met you at SEMA, like, yeah, you're tall too. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh shit.
And, you know, you put the weight on when you get older, you get comfortable in a relationship. I mean, right now I'm 330 pounds trying to move around a car. And I realized I needed to hire. And before I even got to the next day, that night, 10 o'clock, Devin actually sent me a message. It was like, hey, I got laid off because of COVID from Safelite. I'm looking for a part-time job or whatever. And he worked for me for 2 weeks, and he loved it so much that he said he wanted to go full-time. And I was like, well, I could probably create the full-time work. I mean, I'm really good at social media marketing and sales. So yeah. I've never done it because I've never wanted to pack the schedule to the point where you have to work. You know,
that was
the point of starting a business, work when you want to. But I could do it. I think I could do it. He came in the next day and he's like, my wife quit her job. Okay. So you're full-time next week. Okay, cool. Cool. Anxiety attack, right? Now I got to fill the schedule, get you paid. But we did it. We made it happen. Got him paid. Got full schedules. I mean, all we were doing was coatings and maintenance. We did some detail here and there. And then we just scaled that model. I believe December, I went out, I think if I remember correctly, I went out to my parents, and when we flew back in January, we landed, that was day one in the shop.
Okay.
We had to move all the stuff from the tent into our first shop, and then the next day we had cars coming in, so it's just, and it hasn't stopped since. We went from that shop to the bigger shop, I just remodeled the bigger shop. We went through a little to do, tried to open a second location that didn't work out, but we're like hyper focused on the new location. Now I get like 14 million views a month on social media.
Wow.
You're monetizing that. And so much so that y'all remember I got hacked after the podcast. I got hacked 2 more times.
Sorry if we had anything to do with it. I tried to keep the word hacked out of it. You know, I think we ended up calling it the dirty little H word, and it didn't get as many views as I kind of hoped it would, and I think it's because, like, you know, I didn't put hacked in the title or whatever. But yeah, I want to kind of go back and ask you, you know, with bringing Devin on full time and, you know, going like, okay, now we have to scale, like, you know, especially with your anxiety and everything like that, like, what was kind of your thought process? And was it really that easy to, you know, just like flipping on a light switch, like, okay, from going to, we have enough work for us to kind of do, like flipping that light switch and being like, okay, now we can go and get all the other work that maybe we've been turning away or, you know, however you did it.
So my focus has always been like, obviously I love the detail. I'm crazy, just like the rest of us. We hunt perfection. I love to take sandpaper to paint. It's like my favorite pastime because that's what my dad taught me how to do. But I've always been the salesman and the marketer. That's why I was successful in repair business. Even, you know, take big accounts like Jiffy Lube or Firestone. I argued with the marketing department until they just gave me my store's marketing. Because they did a bad job. You think of like a Firestone or Jiffy Lube, they're making an ad or they're making a campaign for a company, not right. for a store. And there's a big difference between making an ad that's going to go to all the United States and making an ad that's going to go to a store. And we know this as detailers, like the way you market in Florida is not going to be the same way I market in Washington.
Exactly.
Different climate patterns. So I would argue until they would give me the marketing, and then I would make my own flyers, my own marketing campaigns. You know, this is back in the yellow book days, yellow book and mailers.
Yeah.
And I did my own marketing. So as I came into my company, part of the transition, I took all the marketing from the company I was working for because they let me go the way they did. They weren't nice about it. Let's put it that way. And everything I had built, they forced me to use Facebook. When I took over, this is back when we were still doing mailers, you know, there were little coupons on the back of receipts. We were doing those. I took over and they said, you're going to use Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and OfferUp to bring in tire sales. And I was like, no, I'm not. And they were like, yes, you are. So they forced me to. And there was a point at which I got to basically throw away about 10 grand a month for 3 months straight.
Oh, wow.
I literally was trying to waste it. I was trying to prove that I was right. You know, the cocky young guy.
Yeah.
Trying to prove you're right, that we should go back to the marketing that I know because it works better. And Facebook took off. I crushed it. Like the store that had opened 3 months prior to me, because this was a new chain of tire stores. They've since gone out of business. But the store that had opened prior to me was open 3 months prior to me, and we were already quadrupling their sales.
Oh, wow.
So Facebook worked. So foot in mouth. Okay, I guess you were right. OfferUp did not work and Craigslist didn't work. So I was still partly right. But Facebook worked. And my name was Jonathan Tyre, T-Y-R-E.
Uh-huh.
So when they let me go, I took it all with me. I said, screw you. If you're going to fire me, I'm going to take this with me. And I started a detail company with that profile. Okay. I just changed it to Jonathan Michael Munson, which is my full name. My mom loved the fact that I used my middle name because, you know, that's what she named me. And then I started a company with it, started the same processes. You know, I got into Facebook groups and stuff, and that's how I scaled the company was that. So it wasn't hard to get the sales in. What was hard was the level of work, right? Devin is really detailed. And it's funny, you talk to him today and you're like, you remember your polishes from year one? He's like, oh yeah. I said, do you do the same quality now? Oh no. And that's what you have to realize as you scale a company and as you step out and you become the owner or the marketer or the sales representative, you're no longer doing the work. You have to sell the level of work that the team can achieve.
Right.
You can't sell sanding a car if your guys never held sandpaper.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You can't sell a rotary job if he's never worked a rotary. Yeah.
I mean, you could.
You know, you're just going to make work for some other detail that's going to be like, you know, the other guy in town kind of pictures or whatever.
I will never forget a random sidebar. The first time he went through a bumper with rotary, I was sitting at my desk and in the old shop, I didn't have an office. So my desk was here and the tunnel light and where we did the coatings was here. And then the maintenance was behind me. So there's always noise. And I'm sitting there just typing away, doing my marketing. And I hear, I'm fired. I turn and look, and like you could just see the you know how it delams, it just
falls
right on the bumper. And I was like, man, you know what? I've never taught you to not go hammer on plastic, so that's my fault. I take ownership of it. Let's get it repainted. You're fine, man. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my fault. I should have to pay for it. No, it's not. That's what insurance is for, and we just took care of it. But you got to scale the systems and operations and the work at the level of what you can provide. And that was the challenging part, you know, because I want to bring in the classics and I want to sand cars.
Right.
You know, every time I told the guys, every time you see me working on a car, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Because I should be the marketing and sales department, especially now. With the social media, the amount of leads that come through, it's a full-time job. So if you see me actually working on a car, I'll work on like one or two a month just to produce a series that people like to watch because they like to see, you know, the fat guy working on the cars. It's the beautiful beard, right?
Yeah.
But that was the hard part, was scaling the level of service. So like we did like one step corrections in the beginning,
okay,
enhancement and coatings. And then as we grew and got better, I could step out more and I could sell more of that. So like even now, Devin can sand. He can do full sand jobs on cars. We just had a truck that we just did a series with Jason Kilmer. Jason did half the hood. And I was like, all right, Devin, you handle the other half. And he hadn't done one in a while. So, of course, I go in early just to be the support, you know, just in case you need me.
Yeah.
He's working on a completely different car because he doesn't want my help. He's like, screw you. I can handle this. Sends a picture later on that day after I left the shop. He sanded it 2K, 3K compound polish. But you can't sell all that. You know, that's him. So right. You think about repair shops, you got A-Tech, B-Tech, C-Tech.
Yeah.
Your A-Tech is your diagnostic tech. You're not going to bring in diagnostic for the whole crew. You're going to bring in diagnostic for your A-Tech, and then your A-Tech's going to sell the job. And if it's right. lower level work, like, oh, it needs a brake job because the noise was coming from the brakes, then your B-Tech and C-Tech will handle that while he moves on to more diag. So the system, I had to systemize just like I did repair shops, to where now I have my lead tech that can do my top tier work. I need to get my C-Tech to a B-Tech, and then I need to hire. And then that guy takes over the C-Tech work. And we're actually in that transition again. We're trying to pull Andrew out. Andrew's what you'd call C-Tech, not to insult him, but he does maintenance and he doesn't hold polishers. If he is, something's wrong. He doesn't enjoy it. He really likes interior work and maintenance work. And we're trying to scale him out of the shop because now the backside, the payroll, the taxes, the QuickBooks is all like a full-time job.
Right.
And we need to bring somebody in at that C-Tech level. So that's the hard part, in my opinion. When you scale is holding back from offering what you typically offer as the owner operator. I mean, like you can do way more than what the average person could do on a car. And then you bring in somebody and you're like, oh, this guy can't even hold a rotary.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. And you got to sell that kind of work. So that was the hard part.
Right. Exactly. Well, listen, let's do a commercial break real quick. And then I want to come back and ask you a question about that. So, we'll be right back. Where is your ultimate partner in automotive detailing? Elevate your detailing game with our premium microfiber towels and applicators, meticulously crafted for protection. Unleash the power of precision and achieve that showroom shine. Autofiber, where innovation meets immaculate finish. Upgrade your detailing experience today. Visit autofiber.com and use the code DSP for 10% off your order. The differences in the details. Okay, so when you're talking about like scaling to your abilities, right? And when you're talking about, you know, when Devin came in and, you know, he could only do so much or whatever. So how did you help him get to a higher level so then you could bring in a higher level of work and then kind of just keep that process, you know, going up and up and up?
I like to, I enjoy detailing. So I like to work on the cars when I can. So what I would do, I mean, we work together in the driveway, the bad back days where I would do as much as I could, but like your lower panels, I didn't have lifts and stuff in the driveway. My driveway was a 30 degree angle. So he's going to have to do that kind of stuff. So the processes that I would run on the top of a panel, he would run on the bottom of a panel. And I'd just keep an eye on him.
Okay.
And then it got to the point where you slowly release, right? So my training technique was taught to me by Steve Warner. He was a guy that taught me in Jiffy Lube. One of the few that I respect. I mean, when you study leadership, you know, a 9 doesn't follow a 7. You know, 9 follows a 10. And I like to think of myself when it comes to leadership and when it comes to what I do, I hold myself to a high accountability. So I don't follow people that can't lead. And Steve Warner could. And one of the ways he taught us to train was I do, I say. So I would go work with him on a car and I would polish an area and say, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. This is why I'm using the pad I'm using. This is why I'm using the compound I'm using. This is the theory behind it. This is what you test if you're trying out new things. And then he would do, and I would say, so I do, I say, you do, I say. And that's solidifying what you've said. So he's now doing the work. You're saying, this is why you're doing it. The third step is you do, you say. So you're doing the work. You're telling me why you're doing the work. And it needs to make sense. It's not just BS thrown back at me. It needs to be what we taught.
Right.
The final piece and the piece that most owners will never do is I do, you say. So I will actually do the work and you'll tell me why I'm doing the work. So you basically get to be my boss at that level. And that's how you create leaders and how you scale somebody's abilities. So I would do that once every 90 days, jump in. And then we took him out to, I think, New York. No, we did a training first in my old shop. And we had Mike Madin come through and teach Rotary. So he learned there. And then we brought him to New York again. And he went through another Rotary course. And it was after that second course that he started using Rotary. And I'll never forget the first car he finished the Rotary. He was struggling with a DA because it was leaving a bad haze.
Yeah.
Sends me a picture and he's like, it's all done. I finished it with Rotary. You know, as an owner, you know how hard that is. And it doesn't matter which way you finish down, Rotary or DA, you're either getting haze or wisp, right?
Yeah.
So you know, okay, you finished with a Rotary. That's the more complicated. I'll inspect it when I get in. Don't let the customer know that it's done yet. And I got in and I looked at that thing and was like, damn, dude, you finished with a Rotary. Huh. I guess it's time to step up service. And that's when we started really getting into the correction market, which okay. I was doing anyway. You know, I was doing back canopy. So it was, we just expanded it. You know, we brought in more correction jobs, but it's, you know, 90 days at a time. Give them a task, follow up on the task, make sure they're getting good at it the next 90 days. And we still do that to this day. You know, I go out in the shop. We just had Jason train with Devin, just teaching him some new tricks with microfiber pads and, you know, heat cycling paint and then working your compounds down so you don't have to use, you know, heavy cut, medium cut, finishing polish on medium clears. It's just not necessary. And then Jason actually got to work with Tanner too, which is one of our secondary techs. And he's getting damn good too. And, you know, he taught him some cool stuff. And we'll probably do the same thing. You know, 90 days from now, I'll have Jason come back in the shop. I'll pay him to train directly with Tanner. And then we'll do the same thing with my manager, Glenn, who I love you, Glenn, if you watch this, not the best paint correction guy. He can handle a polisher, but his job is to run the shop.
Yeah.
He has a bachelor's degree in business and he can hold people accountable better than anybody in the shop because he's got a cool head. So his job is to run the shop, not be great at paint correction. So love him to death. That's his job.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Sorry. That's stupid. I got to figure out how to turn that off so it doesn't bing on the episodes. But that's cool. I mean, it's like I said, I mean, we were the first time I had known of you or whatever was because of IGL, right? Like we were both IGL installers at the time. So that's kind of how I, you know, knew of you on social media and, you know, became to follow you and watch your growth, you know, watch you, like you said, like, you know, working in a canopy in your garage and then getting into your first shop and now your second shop. And it's just been cool to watch that growth and see what you've done because, you know, I think there's a lot of other people out there who try to do it and just don't or can't, you know? So watching somebody who does do it. The other thing I kind of want to jump into is, you know, the social media stuff, like you said, I mean, you're getting, you know, tons of views and followers and monetizing and all that now, like, when did you kind of make that decision of like, hey, let me go be a content creator, or hey, this would be kind of cool, let me throw it up and see what happens? Like, you know, when did that kind of happen, and what made you kind of gravitate towards trying it and then moving forward with it?
That was actually part of therapy. When I first told my story and then I told it publicly, I told it on a live video first before I told it publicly, because I was like, I need to get this out so I don't end up, because when I'm a what would you call it, a dramatic crier, like I can't talk when I cry. Some okay. people can do the thing where they talk through. I can't. Yeah. Do that. I'm just or nothing at all. And I wanted to be able to at least talk and not have a total breakdown. So I told it live first, and the same feeling, right? I feel like I relieved myself a little bit. So I went live 2-3 times a day for an entire year.
Oh, wow.
Just to, you know, here we are on location doing a detail. And I would tell a little bit about myself, a little bit about the company, and a little bit about the job we were doing. One of the first times I ever did an instructional live before I would put my face on things was, it was just my hands.
Okay.
And I got a ton of comments from my clients. We want to see your pretty face. And I'm the kind of guy that, you know, you got the conspiracy brain, you don't want to put your face all over the place. And, you know, then it's out there forever. So it took a minute for me to go, okay, let me put my face in a video. And I was talking to Andrew. I was like, they want it, man. We got to give the audience what they want. And I started doing instructional videos and started showing my face more and more. And again, therapeutic. It was the reason why it became easy to do was because every time I did it, I felt better because I let a piece of me out there, and then you get the support back. But the biggest part for me was, you know, you draw a line and you say, these are my core values. If somebody doesn't align with those core values when I share them, then sharing them did me a favor. It showed me to my true supporters, and it showed me who shouldn't be my supporters.
And right.
You know, I don't want you to be my client if you don't like me. If you don't like, and I know that sounds weird, especially when you get big business, who cares if you like me or not, buy the product. That's not how I run my business. If you don't align with my core values, then I don't want to do business with you. So that alone allowed me to create more content. And then it took off, you know, Facebook, we started getting a lot of follows. I think our first big one was like 10 grand. I was like, wow. So we did a thing. And honestly, I didn't even focus on Instagram until about a year ago.
Okay.
Now we got 110,000 followers on Instagram. And then when Shorts came out, which was, I don't know exactly when it started, but I started doing Shorts about 2.5-3 years ago. That was my thing, because I tell stories. But to be able to tell a story in 60 seconds and just put it out there makes it more powerful. And
then right.
It started going crazy. You know, I got to put my personality in it. I had one video. I set myself a goal to do 3 videos a day at the time. And I was like, crap, I haven't done a video. So I grabbed a wheel and just ran around the shop. And I pumped some stuff into a spray ball. And when I did it, I was like, on the video. Just having fun with it. And that video got, before I even got home that day, had like 175,000 views. I woke up the next day and had like 2.5 million. I was like, huh, interesting. And then from there, I just study and study and study. And I created a system of how you post, what you include, how you hook the viewers, how you gain their attention throughout the video. And you know, now we have almost 1 million followers across all the platforms. I'm at like 725,000. TikTok has kind of died off. They're doing the whole horizontal video thing, and they're
I saw that now. Yeah,
they're kiboshing creators, man. They've got creators that have millions of followers that are frustrated. You know, you got 10 million followers and you're getting 40,000 views.
Yeah,
how is that even a possibility? The most consistent I'm finding now is Instagram, which is why it's growing so fast.
Okay.
Because I'm getting my time is getting paid back. So when I post on Instagram, I'll get easily 40 to 60,000 views on most of the videos. If they're crappy videos, I'll get like 10. And then Facebook is my focus. But I start everything on TikTok because it's easy to post. It's easy to create. And then I take that video and I distribute it elsewhere. I just have fun. I enjoy it. People, why don't you have somebody else do that? It takes up so much of your time. And I'm like, I don't want to. I like it.
It's fun. Yeah. Well, besides, like you said, right? Like your job now is more of, you know, the marketing, the front of office type stuff, right? Like you don't, like, why not? Like you're, you know, it's your business. You probably know more about it than if you brought somebody else in to like shoot it or create or whatever. So, you know, it's better that you do it. It's more real. It's more genuine.
I still remember, and not to give a plug here, but I remember when Hunter came on to take over my Facebook marketing. He's now AdMotive, right? They've all joined forces with each other, and it's a bigger company now. But when he took over my marketing, he was like, "I'm a little nervous." And I'm like, "Why?" And he's, "Don't you know how to do this?" He's like, "Yeah, but so do you, and you're damn good at it."
Yeah.
That just makes it better, because me and you will have a meeting once a week. We'll chat about ideas. We'll put out some damn good content, and we'll just crush it. And that's what we've done. He's been with me 3 or 4 years now. And I just talked to him today, actually, and we're scaling our marketing. I'm quadrupling my ad spend because March is on its way. And March is when our season kicks off here. So it's just funny. It's, I don't know. I went to my doctor's office yesterday, and the receptionist follows us.
Uh-huh.
So as I broke through the elevator, because you walk in the elevator and there's a desk right there as soon as you walk through, she's like, "Oh my God, it is you." I'm like, "Excuse me?" She's like, "The logo on your shirt," because I had this same shirt on.
Yeah.
I said, "Yeah, oh, so you must follow us." And she's like, "Oh, I watch all of your videos. Your latest video on that scratch removal was awesome. I'm going to scratch down my car, da, da, da." And we just started talking. She just enjoys, you know, the content, the way I explain it and everything. But as I come out of the doctor's office, I'm walking around the corner and I can hear her, "It makes it so much easier to wash your car. Ceramic coating is just so awesome. You should watch his videos." So she's advertising for me.
Advertising. Yeah. No, that's awesome.
Around the corner, and I was like, you know, just like, "Hi, ready to check out." And she's like, "That's him. That's the guy I was telling you about." And the two receptionists now are both talking to me about their cars. They both have new cars. And I told her, I said, "I tell you what, you've been so nice to me, and you've been nice enough to talk about my business to other people. I'll fix that scratch on your car for free." Because,
oh, that's cool.
Let's be honest, who does most of the work in a doctor's office? The receptionist?
The receptionist, exactly, yeah.
So if I fix her car, who's she going to tell? Everyone at the doctor's office. So hopefully she comes through. But it's just cool. They look at me like some kind of all-star. I'm like, I'm just a normal, I wash cars for a living. You know, I love business and stuff, but literally I just geek over the pH scale. I found a, I don't know if you saw, my mom passed in 2022.
Yeah, I did.
But I went out and, you know, cleaning out the house, putting everything together for Dad, you know, helping him go through. Mom had a lot of stuff, so helping him go through all that stuff. I found a report I wrote when I was in high school, and it was on the pH scale and water purification. And I was like, "No shit." I've been a total geek for a long time.
Right. Yeah.
Looking back, that was from my dad. My dad was in the military, and he transferred to the water purification side of things. And that's how I began to learn about the pH scale and everything. So it's just funny. It's a long time coming.
Yeah, no, that is pretty neat. Cause I mean, you think about, you know, you learn about the pH scale or whatever in school, and you're like, when am I ever going to use this? You know, and you become a detailer, and you need to know what chemicals rank where in the on the scale and everything.
It's, yeah. I mean, me and Jason were just talking about this the other day. He has a little mix he uses. He puts a little bit of like medium polish in his acid that he uses. Okay. And then that's how he gets water spots off of windows. It's a polish that has acid in it. And then grabs his degreaser and he sprays degreaser on to neutralize it. And I was like, "I love you, man."
Yeah.
So many dealers that don't understand the pH scale. And I fix their work all the time. "Oh, acid doesn't etch windows." Okay, cool. Yeah. That's why I had to use a cutting pad on that window.
Right, right.
You're an idiot. Learn your pH scale. So it's fun. I like it.
No, it's awesome. I mean, so what are your plans? I mean, do you have plans going forward for scaling the social media side of it? I mean, it seems like you kind of have the lockdown on scaling the business and kind of where you want it to be and everything. But with social media kind of being a big part of it, you know, what's the next step for you there?
Well, I already hit my Instagram goal for the year.
Okay.
wanted 100,000 followers. I'm at 111. So I'm probably going to shoot for 200 there. We're doing subscriptions now on Instagram. Little plug, $5. And Jason Kilmer and I will show you all the things that cost you thousands of dollars to learn.
Nice.
The idea is we want to put the basic polishing skills in the hands of the consumers. Because if you know a little bit about it and you try to polish a car, it'll give us more respect for the top end stuff. And also to give the skill level to the up and coming detailers, because there's going to be a time when we're done and we retire and the next generation of detailers has to know what they're doing. So we're just $5 you subscribe. I just did a 9-minute video the other day on Jason. He was he took a hood from 1500 grit up, and I did a video on that. We did a scratch removal video. I've done a water etching video when water etches your windows.
Yep.
So we're just trying to produce subscriber content so I can monetize that. So I can basically take what the company pays me now, give it back to the company, give my manager a nice raise, and step out, allow that company to do what it does, let it profit, pull quarterly profits from it. And I'm a stock trader now. That's what I do all week. I pay attention to stocks. Last year it was up 133%. This year I'm trying to be up about the same amount, if not more. So that's
wow, that's awesome. So are you on the GameStop to the moon?
No, I mean, I watched GameStop for a while just to study it, but I trade oil, UCO and SCO. Oh, okay. Oil tend to mirror each other. Made $4,000 this week trading oil. I'm up this year so far 17%. So, if you do the numbers exponentially, if I can continue just doing what I've done the last 2 years, I should be a multimillionaire in 3 years.
There you right? go.
Little quotation there.
Yeah.
Should be. Well, and then, I mean, that's the win, right? We've taken the money from the detail company. We've turned it into investment money. I'm buying a house this year. That's
the plan.
And then I want to get into property. What I really want to do, this is my latest like dream goal. I told Andrew, I said, I want to get into property. Like, we buy our house this year. So I'm going to trade stocks and I'm going to take the profits from the company and just keep it in an account. So by the time I hit August, I can sit down. If they say, no, I can't approve you for a loan, I say, well, I have $500,000. I'll just buy the house.
Right.
And then they go, oh, okay. Well, we can't approve you for a loan. And then I leverage that money to get into property. And I want to have 5 properties that are rental properties.
Okay.
And there's only one reason why, because I want Christmas to roll around and I want to call every one of my rental property. I don't know what we call them, my renters, my clients, and say, Merry Christmas, no rent this month, and send me the list of your kids' wants and needs for Christmas. And I want to do the real Santa thing, and I want to provide for 5 families. So that's like the latest wish, latest goal.
So I want to kind of finish up on there before we go to the last commercial break. That is something that you're very big on, the Santa Claus thing every year. So when did that start, and what was like the motivation, you know, for doing that and everything?
We've always done food drives. We did food drives, and this is another thing. I was raised into this. My parents were Baptist. You know, we did street preaching. We provided food for the hungry, clothes for the needy. And it's something that I've always done. It's been ingrained in me, and just be a kind person, wake up every day and try to do one kind thing. And then as we started to scale the company, you know, I learned about what giving actually does, that feeling you get when you buy something for somebody that's nice, and they get it and they're like, wow, I've never been treated this way. And you get that buttery feel, or that butterfly feeling. That's the release of DHEA in your body. Your body produces cortisol when it's stressed out. And the only way to monitor keep cortisol levels in track is DHEA. So quite literally, to keep your stress levels low or your cortisol low, giving is how you do it. And for those that don't believe in a creator, I can't even think of a better system to create to literally make a human being scientifically designed to give so that they're not stressed out. So we started doing food drives every time we scaled the company.
Yes.
To relieve our stress. So we did it on our off time. That was awesome. And as that scaled, I grew a beard 1 year and was like, I could be a real Santa instead of a fake Santa. I could just color the beard white, and we did it one year. I had a blast. We went to Walmart and went shopping with the food bank workers. And I said, let's just make this an annual thing. And then when I lost Evelyn and my mom, I raised 22 grand that year because of our social media following. And I went out and did that food drive. We spent over 20 grand on food for two different food banks. One food bank fuels 13 other food banks in our state. And that's we just do it every year now. It's just been, it's too much fun not to do it.
Yeah.
I want to do it more often. This year we're supposed to be doing a food drive in July. I don't know if it will break out Santa for the food drive in July, but the whole premise was Christmas in July. Yeah. So we might break out Santa mid year this year, and we'll see how it goes. We'll see what
we can raise for fundage. That's awesome. Okay. Well, let's do our last commercial break and we'll come back. And I've got some new questions that I'm going to start asking. So we'll start with you for new questions. We'll be right back. Bon is a leading provider of tent, paint protection film, and ceramic coatings. Experience the transformation as you cool down your vehicle and elevate its curb appeal with Audubon's window tent. Ditch rock chips and scratches by fortifying your paint with Audubon's cutting-edge paint protection film. And for an additional safeguard, add a ceramic coating. Backed by an unwavering lifetime warranty, Audubon's products form automotive armor with no limits. Visit AudubonFilms.com to delve deeper into the realm of automotive care and protection. Okay, so new questions. I'm going to start with you. So I was trying to think of some different ones. I loved all the other questions that we asked, but kind of been asking them a lot. So I think they're getting a little stale. Maddie Gibb would stop messaging me. Okay, so the first one is I'm calling it the Groundhog Day question. So you know the movie Groundhog Day, right?
Oh, yeah.
Bill Murray's stuck in Groundhog Day. Like realistically, we don't know how long was he really stuck in Groundhog Day, right? Like just living the same day over and over again. So my question is, if you were stuck in Groundhog Day, living the same day over and over and over again, what would be some of the, now after you tried to kill yourself like Bill Murray did, right? What would be some of the things that you would try or to learn or do or become, you know, kind of like he did, right? Like he became like an awesome piano player, just learning piano every day, you know, all the other things. So you're stuck in Groundhog Day. What's the thing that, you know, you come to grips with it? What's the thing that you try to learn or try to be or try to do?
This is going to sound corny, but if I know I'm going to wake up the next day and have everything that I had the prior day, I would spend the entire day trying to give as much as I could. Because that's my best feeling for me. Like we have times we'll go to Walmart and we'll just take a wad of cash and we'll walk up to people at the register, give them $50 to pay for whatever it is they're buying. We have times where we'll tip a waitress $100, you know, we'll sit outside and we'll just wait and watch, you know, we don't record it or post about it or anything.
Right.
You know, just to see the, oh, and then sometimes it's, oh, and they start crying, and that kind of stuff I love doing, and I'm truly trying to get financially to the point where I can do that way more often. So I would do that every day, all day. Just, I mean, when you can give the shirt off your back and everything you own, and wake up the next morning and have it all back.
Right. Yeah.
Why not see how it's going to affect people?
No, that's awesome. That's a great, I think, first answer for this. Everybody else that's going to come after this is just going to sound like an asshole now. So good job. Set the bar really high. You did.
I do.
Okay. So next question is the Back to the Future question. The DeLorean shows up in your parking lot, whatever. You can go anywhere in time. Where are you going?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard one, man, with mom just passing.
Yeah.
I'm going back to see mom.
Smart.
Doesn't matter when. I just miss her.
No, that's awesome. All right, and then I'm going to stick with, because it's a fairly new question, so this is kind of one of the older ones, but it's fairly new, is what is your death row last meal?
Oh, gosh. Chicken Alfredo. Andrew makes a bomb-ass chicken Alfredo, homemade sauce and everything, and it's like 2,200 calories with the serving that I end up eating.
I mean, you're going out anyway, so right. Who cares, right?
And I would eat four or five of those servings.
Yeah.
Try to eat as much as you can to make the biggest mess when you die.
There you go. Yep. Exactly. All right. Well, listen, Jonathan, I know you've got to run to a thing. So, you know, we're just a couple minutes shy. It's not a big deal. I appreciate you for doing this, man. Thanks for, you know, like I said, you've been that somebody that's been on my radar all the time. But again, you keep getting hacked on social media, so you're not always popping up in my algorithm. And so I kind of, you know, forget about it from time to time. And so when I made that post, yesterday or the other day, whenever it was, I'm glad that you mentioned it. I'm glad that you saw it, and I'm glad that you commented on it, because it immediately went like, that's the guy I want to talk to. Like, you know, there was a few other people who, you know, commented, and nothing against them, we'll get to them, but I've been wanting to do this with you for a while with your story and everything, so I greatly appreciate you coming on and doing this, man. I'll let you bounce out of here. Have a great day.
Time to go have some chicken Alfredo.
Yeah, there you go. All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Have a good one, buddy.
Bye. All right. So that was Jonathan. I mean, he's just a swell guy. I mean, if you're not following him, please go follow him. He's been on the show a couple times before now, actually. And he's just always a good guy to talk to and everything like that. So I will end it with, please go like, share, follow, subscribe, hit that notification button anywhere that you are listening to us. I guess I just was notified that for some reason the YouTube is gone. So I'd like to think that somebody didn't sabotage me. But now I've got to go figure out why we don't have YouTube. So if you can't find us on YouTube, I don't know. We'll see. My name is Alex. Have a great day, night, weekend, whenever you're listening to this. We appreciate it. Take care. Bye.